Hey, this is Stacey Gatsoulias.
DC Lundberg.
Ryan Finkelstein.
Taylor Blake Ward.
Host of Locked On Yankees.
Locked On Mariners.
Locked On Mets.
Locked On Angels.
And you're listening to Locked On Braves.
Locked On Braves.
Locked On Braves.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey guys, welcome into another episode of Locked On Braves, found on Locked On Podcast Network, found where all your favorite podcasts are. Now, today, I'm not going to do a prospect countdown. Today, I was kind of looking through my old podcasts for the Platinum Sombrero, the other podcast I do, the weekly one, and I thought it might be a cool idea since I know I picked up a lot of listeners along the way. There's a lot of you guys who may not have heard some of my earlier episodes for the Platinum Sombrero, so I went back and I picked one of my favorite episodes that we've ever recorded. It was the 22nd episode featuring former scouting director of the Atlanta Braves, Brian Bridges, who is now a cross-checker with the San Francisco Giants. So I took about 25 minutes or so of the interview, and I've decided that for today's episode, I'm going to go ahead and cut this into a couple parts here, and I think I might play some of this episode for a while now and play it for a couple shows. But what I want to do here is go ahead and get this started. This is Brian Bridges, formerly scouting director of the Atlanta Braves, now a cross-checker with the San Francisco Giants organization, one of the most respected talent evaluators in the business, talking about the 2018 MLB draft and some of the process of going through that. So I hope you guys enjoy listening to this one. If you haven't heard it before, I think you guys are in for a treat. This really is probably one of the favorite things I've ever recorded and one of my favorite guests that I've ever recorded with. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and play this first part for you here. Hope you guys enjoy. Sit tight.
So as it pertains to the 2018 draft, it was the first time that you and Alex had a chance to put together a whole draft. And I know that you have a huge team of scouts that are working tirelessly to make all of this happen. To me, the thing that stood out about this draft the most was how college heavy it was. You know, the Braves are really well known for taking a lot of high school arms, bringing them through the system, doing things the quote-unquote right way. Mm-hmm. But this year, it was 34 out of 39 picks were college players. Mm-hmm. So was that excuse me, how much of a conscious decision was that? Was there a particular methodology behind that, or what was the biggest reason for that, if you had to?
Well, there's a little secret to it that I just really don't want to share, but I will share you a little bit of it. I'll give you a little bit of my, you know, opinion of it. Most high school kids, as far as when you start talking about a certain level of talent, when you're picking 8 and 49, there's a lot of players that go in between that. And if you guys just go back and play that draft over, you could see a lot of players that went in between there that we probably had a lot of interest in. So when you go high school, I'll tell you this, and everybody knows it, I prefer high school players every day of the week. I believe in the upside, but I am going to take the best available player. And there are college guys with upside. I mean, when you start talking about, you know, as they go through it, I mean, just going back to this draft, I mean, you go Grayson Janista, he can run. Okay, this guy was a tape league player of the year. He's 6'4", 230 pounds. I know I'd mentioned it, you know, probably during the draft in some interviews that he had draftitis because he also played with Alec Baum that was on his team, and he was pressing a little bit. He wasn't really himself. But once you saw that guy outside of, you know, Wichita State when he was playing on the Cape, it gave you an opportunity to see both sides. So you kind of made your decision on what you thought about his talent, both in college and out of college. Now, he played for Coach Butler there. Todd Butler is one of the best human beings. I mean, he orchestrated a lot of teams over at Arkansas, and then now he's running things over at Wichita State. And I believe in that man as much as I believe in Kevin O'Sullivan, who's probably my best friend in all of baseball. And, but seeing him there, it's not like he was browbeat when he was in college. He just had draftitis. So this kid can run, he can throw, he can defend, he can hit. And once he taps into that, I still think there's more to the power with that player. So when you start thinking about upside, we all love the high school player. I'm sure both of you guys do too, right? We all do. I do. I'm going to tell you. I mean, if the previous drafts haven't told you that, then, you know, I don't know what to say. But when you sit down and you start thinking about how you go about your business in a draft, a lot of people have to understand that we lost 13 international players. Those were good players. Gordon Blakely and his staff had signed some good players. We lost them. And, you know, I read everything that was written, and, you know, it's just, you know, we're just kind of in a tough place. And we're going to be in a tough place for a few years as far as international goes. But when you start looking at the ones that were left, I mean, Contreras, you look at Encarnacion, who was signed for, I think, $10,000. I mean, look at what that guy's doing in Rome right now. But when you start thinking about what you got to do, not only we didn't draft on need, we draft on talent. And it just so happened that the guys, there was steady talent in the college level, and the upside talent was gone. How about that?
I can totally understand that. And as far as Grayson goes, everything I've seen of him, I think that I would agree with you in my unprofessional opinion that there is a ton of power potential there as a guy that really for most of his college career and even a lot of his Cape career kind of leveled off on his swing trying to affect more loft in it. So I would imagine that's one of the things that he started working on right away. And it's paid dividends. I mean, he was tearing it up through the GCL. He's already in Rome now where he's putting on a good show. All of those guys, and it's not just Grayson Janista. You guys got Tristan Beck late in the draft, which was really shocking to a lot of people. AJ Graffanino has been outstanding.
Yes. Well, there's a guy that only played 24 games. You know, because of a pulled hammy the whole year. So, started thinking about, you know, his potential, and a lot of what I had seen out of him was the summer before when he was playing at Brewster on the Cape League. You know, you see him, he's got bloodlines, his dad comes from a wonderful family, and this kid wants it as much as any kid. You know, I've either signed and or drafted, and I've drafted some that really want it. I mean, I've been fortunate, knock on wood. These kids that we have in our system right now, they're not going to give up. They're not going to quit. And they have great makeup. And they're going to do everything they can to get to SunTrust Park and help the Braves win a World Series for sure.
I don't think anybody was surprised by Graffanino's glove. If anybody knew the profile, Graffanino is an outstanding defensive shortstop. People have been shocked by the bat. I've been a little bit shocked by it. Riley Delgado, another one, as a guy who's just gone around and been a total stabilizing force out there at shortstop. He was a little bit older than everybody else, but young teams need that as well. It's a guy that comes in and, you know, you instantly think, oh, he's 23, so there's not a lot of upside there. But all Riley's done is mash the ball left and right and field a great shortstop, which helps those young guys develop behind him.
Let me give you a funny story on that one, and it kind of goes hand in hand with what's happening this weekend. We, you know, have our annual workout that we have at SunTrust Park, and our area scout at the time, Dustin Evans, had brought Delgado in. So, you know, his team was done playing, so we'd bring him in, work him out, and let him hit on, you know, the field. And, you know, we have other top guys in there. And there's a certain Hall of Famer that's going in the Hall of Fame this year. I mean, we all know him as Chipper, you know. We get done with workout, and, you know, I was like, hey, what do you guys think? You know, we're all sitting around talking. Chipper was like, hey, I don't know what you guys thought, but the Delgado kid was laying out linhas all over the yard. He wasn't trying to hit balls out of the yard. He was just laying out linhas everywhere, hitting the ball where it was pitched. You know, he really did a good job of never seeing the player and evaluating the player at a workout, which is a no-no when you sit and think about, you know, from a scout standpoint, you don't evaluate a player at a workout. That's a good way of getting burned. But, you know, him being a senior, and I want to go back and I don't want to be mistaken when I say this, he made like two errors in 2 years at shortstop at Middle Tennessee State. So we knew defensively what we were getting, and he caught Chipper's eye at the workout. So I have to give credit where credit is due, and Mr. Hall of Famer got that one right for sure.
It's not a bad guy to get a hitting recommendation from.
Yeah, really. Pretty ringing endorsement.
Yes, and don't think I don't use that. You know, I definitely send a share of videos and stuff to his computer, you know, to have him, you know, give his input and his opinion. Because one thing I can tell you about Chipper, he's not going to sugarcoat it. He's going to give me exactly what he thinks.
He's and also never afraid to go big. I mean, I remember the first time I heard Ronald Acuna's name, it was right before he started that mammoth tear a year ago. It was Chipper who came into the radio station I was at and told everybody that this kid's the next Andrew Jones. That was the first time I'd heard anything about him.
Yeah. And he'll throw little jabs at me, you know. He'll send me a text, hey, how's Delgado doing? You know, he was in Rome at about 3:30, you know. I knew where he was going with it. I was like, you don't ask a question if you don't know the answer. So, you know, it's a good group of guys. You know, you sit and think about a staff. We have 27 guys on our staff. We also have, you know, Chipper, you know, we ask, you know, I'll send him stuff. We got Greg Walker, who was our former hitting coach. He's, you know, done a lot in the game as far as hitting goes. He goes out and sees hitters, and we have the prime dog, Brad McGriff, who goes out and sees hitters and works with the Tournament of Stars up there and coaches those teams in Cary, which you guys are all aware of the upcoming draft class. So he's done that the past 2 years and managed a team up there. Can't say he's the best manager, but he manages the teams, and the kids have a great time with him. And, you know, Fred has a good eye for talent as well. So we're very fortunate with the amount of outside help that Alex has allowed us to continue to have. And those guys' input, I mean, the amount of players that they've seen over their careers, I mean, Greg Walker played, what, 9.5 years? Fred played 18. Chipper played for, you know, a while. And those guys take pride in, you know, in helping out. And I mean helping out and really putting their hands in on it and having a, you know, personal debt into what we're doing. So we're very fortunate as a staff.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and put a quick pause on that. We're going to take our first break of the show. When we come back from break, I will have more of mine and Doc's interview with Brian Bridges. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're not going to want to miss this second portion of it. Coming up next right here on Locked On Braves. Do you hate stepping on the scale? I know I do. Maybe it's because you haven't met the right one. A company called Withings has produced the world's first smart scale, and they're still the best. In fact, Tom's Guide rated Withings Body Plus the best overall smart scale for 2020. If you're looking to lose weight, willpower is key, but so is having the right tools. Withings smart scales are known for their durability and an exceptional user-friendly design. Just step on and data from every weigh-in syncs automatically to the free app for iOS and Android via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. Lots of smart scales don't even have the Wi-Fi option, and it means you have to keep your phone on you. But Withings Body Plus gives weight, full body composition, weight trend, even a local weather report. The scale can support up to 8 users and even know who is who. So here's the deal, guys. You can get 25% off of Withings Body Plus right now at Withings.com for a very limited time. Go to Withings.com, that's Withings.com/MLB to get 25% off the Body Plus body composition scale. That's Withings, Withings.com/MLB to get 25% off the Body Plus body composition scale. Welcome back from break, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Braves. As I said before the break, we're going to go and dive right back into this interview with Brian Bridges. This one, make sure you're paying really close attention, guys. This is a very, very good segment involving somebody else we've interviewed on the Platinum Sombrero. So without further ado, I bring you part two. Hope you guys enjoy.
Now, I want to go back to something real quick. You mentioned that high schoolers were your favorite. Obviously, there's a ton of upside with high school players. And right. I'm not going to lie, Doc and I did cry a little bit. Doc had his eye on Jared Kelenic, and I was a big Connor Scott homer.
Yes.
But I wanted to ask, because it's such a weird thing when you talk about projecting a high school baseball player. We've said this before on the show. It's the hardest sport to project 5 years down the road because there's so much involved on the mental side, not just the physical side. How do you go about and when you're looking at a high school guy and say, oh, that guy's a number two down the road. This kid may be 15, 16 years old throwing 82 mile an hour. How do you figure out that this guy, just looking at him, all right, he's going to throw 94. He's going to be a top of the rotation type of guy.
Well, you look at size to start with, and definitely even if he's rangy, he's broad shoulder, you look at arm speed. How much arm speed does he have to project on a 88 to 91 mile an hour fastball when you see him, you know, as a young player? And then I always look at the breaking ball velocity. If the breaking ball velocity is 77 or higher and he's 88 to 91, there's enough hand speed there for you to project on future down the road fastball. For sure, take it to the bank. Now, it doesn't always work out. You've got injury or whatnot, and, you know, maybe the player doesn't fill out, or maybe the player plateaus. But for the most part, as long as the arrow is still pointing up, you still have the option to keep climbing with him and betting on him if you know what's inside the shirt. You have to know what's inside the shirt. You have to know what's inside the brain, and that's the area scout's job. You can miss on an evaluation, but you better not miss on the makeup.
And that is I think the key point right there. But I mean, we can go back 2 years ago, and there's a couple guys right there. When you talk about Mike Soroka, who is obviously blowing everybody away, even though he's on the DL a little bit, Mike Soroka, Colby Allard, and Kyle Muller, all in that same area, but all kind of had a little bit of differences to them. Where Soroka came in throwing 88, 91, Colby had that stress fracture, but people thought he'd kind of tune back up to the 93, 94 that he was in high school, and that didn't really work out for him. But both of those guys have kind of settled in, and Mike Soroka's throwing 97 mile an hour sinkers now. What happened?
Well, you know, he was a young one. It came out of his hand, but you look at Mike, he was a big kid. Am I surprised by his ascent through the organization? No. Colby, same way. Muller, one thing you have to give credit to is our player development. Don Cheedy, Jonathan Sherholtz, Dave Shrimley, the whole staff that they have down there, our new hitting coordinator, for sure, that we brought in to get us up to speed as far as, you know, a little bit of loft and making adjustments with guys. But from a pitching standpoint, when you start talking about Dave Wallace, Don Cheedy, Eric Lewis, and all the guys underneath them, Dan Meyer, name escapes me, our guy in AA, our pitching coach in AAA, who's from the Marlins that they brought over here, is outstanding. All up and down our minor leagues, when you start talking about our pitching, it's one thing to draft the talent. It's another thing for me to tell you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, we are turning those players, those pitchers, over to the best pitching coaches in all of baseball. And I believe that with all my heart. And they take those kids on an individual basis, and that's how they teach them. It's not a cookie cut one way. They take the talent that they have and make them better in every aspect of pitching. And I commend all of them, I applaud all of them, and they've done an outstanding job, and proof's in the pudding. I mean, you go back and look, I want to say we're closing in on, from 2002 to the present day, I think we're closing in on 50 guys who've across the arches of Major League Clubhouse that have pitched in the big leagues for Atlanta Braves and or another club that, you know, if they've been traded. That's a lot. And that's a lot for any organization. And it's a factual thing. I'm not pulling that. I may even be a little light on the total dates, but I think it's 2002 or it could be even later, 2004 or 6 to the present day.
It's been so interesting to watch, just watching the minor leagues now. You know, you look at a day like today, and Tuki Toussaint started earlier today. Kyle Wright is starting in about half an hour, and Ian Anderson was supposed to start today, but the game got rained out. Mm-hmm. And it's like that almost every day, where you look and there's some massive pitching prospect that's pitching every single night. And all of these guys, you know, some of them are a little more polished. Like Wright was very polished coming out of Vandy. Anderson was kind of a cold weather arm, and Tukey was obviously incredibly raw when he was drafted by Arizona and then acquired. When you start looking at players that you have taken, that you expected to be very decent or very good, are any examples where somebody has just completely outpaced your expectations? And you know, you said you weren't surprised by Soroka or Allard, but is there anybody who's really, really surprised you?
Yes. And he hasn't picked up a ball this year, but I will tell you right now, Patrick Weigel was the one in 2015. I was just like, wow. This guy jumped in there, had been to a couple different colleges, had kind of been put in a bullpen, had been used this way. We committed to him, our player development, Dave Trimley at the time and Jonathan Scherholz had committed to him that they would let him start. And this player, this kid, took off. I mean, before the Tommy John, I mean, he was in AAA knocking on the door. I mean, yes, Corbin Klaus. You know, I mean, the list goes on and on. Those type of guys who you just sit back and you go, man, you know, we're fortunate enough to have those guys in our system. And you know what? They took the bull by the horns and really grabbed hold of the opportunity that they had and learned as much as they could. And the things that they've done, I tip my hat to both of them. And that's just two examples. I mean, you know, there's others, but those are the two that come to mind right now. I mean, Patrick, you know, seeing him back up on the mound, I know he tweeted it out about, you know, 3 weeks ago when he got to throw a bullpen again. But, I mean, he's a mountain of a man, and he's a very driven kid, and I'm happy for him.
Patty Wags is a favorite of the show. Still waiting for him to respond and come on with us, but, you know, whatever. That's a guy that, you know, a lot of people may be forgetting just how good he was before he went down, and you mentioned that he was up in AAA. What a lot of people might not get is he might have been in front of Sean Newcomb at that time. He was the one out of three between him, Sean, and Lucas, who were all up there in AAA, and Patrick was the one on the fast track, and were it not for that injury, I have no doubts that Patrick would have been in the majors at some point last season. That's a guy that, and I remember the first time I took a look at him, I was trying to grade out a top 30, and I was trying to dig into Weigel's past, and I started looking at his stats as a starter, and then I started looking at his stats in college more as a reliever, and it just did not click for me how a guy could go from being kind of a decent but nothing spectacular reliever, and he's just dominating people on the mound. And then you go and you watch his tape. He had that easy delivery, really clean and smooth mechanics. His curveball was outstanding. It's not Tukey's, but it is an outstanding curveball in its own.
But he has another one. If he doesn't have the curveball, he can beat you with a slider.
And it's just awesome.
The kid, you know what? I'm happy. And him and Soroka, you know, that whole little crew, they were all together in Rome. You know, it was, if you go back and look at it, that 2016 team where all those kids were, Patrick was the one that was the anchor in the beginning. Then they shot him straight to Double-A. Him, if you remember right, he went from low A ball to Double-A.
Didn't skip a beat, too.
No, he just kept right on pouring it in there. So, you know, but that whole crew, it's really a unique bunch. And it's good to see Tukey, you know, who was, you know, I don't want to use the word floundering around a little bit, but when he was in Arizona and the copy made the trade for him, and then he comes over here and he gets with these kids in Rome in 16 and Dan Meyer and Don Cheedy. They get, you know, a plan going for him, and he starts to take off. Then that's when he took off. And if you go back and look at it, it was like midway point that Tukey took off. And it was kind of like when Patrick left, Tukey jumped in, and it was like, you know, those guys, it's a special group of kids, you know. And I think even the group behind them, and then you got Waters and Tarnox figuring it out still, and you know, with Wright, and Wright's got something to learn. Wright went from, you know,
really the draft to Double A. You know, he pitched a little bit in high A ball, but it was an inning here, two innings there, and that's, you know, Dom and the guys knew he'd thrown a lot of innings, so they wanted to make sure they took care of him along the way. But, you know, he's going to have his ups and downs. He's got to learn. One thing that people don't understand, and I think it's, you know, I spent a lot of time with Joe and Phil Negro before I got into this business. And between the both of them, they had spent well over 40 years in major leagues. You know how many players they saw, and they had said this to me, and I've never forgot it. So many players come through the arches, the golden arches of a major league clubhouse, that can't get comfortable in their own skin, no matter what the talent is. You think about that. Then you think about, take it one step further and you go a little bit deeper. You go, man, it's that hard to stick in the major leagues. It's that hard. 750 jobs out there. And when you get that opportunity, you run with it. And then when the league figures you out, if you can't make an adjustment, whether you be a hitter or a pitcher, your career could be done. You have to be able to make the adjustments. And that's where the separators are. And that comes back to the main thing that I said, you know, not too long ago. You can miss on the evaluation, but don't miss on the makeup.
All right, I think that's a good stopping point for today. Hope you guys enjoyed this first installment of the Brian Bridges interview. Kind of unsure about what I'm going to do tomorrow. I might play a little bit more of this interview. I might go back to doing some prospects. Not quite sure. Whatever the case is, I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode, and I hope you guys will enjoy whatever it is that I decide to do tomorrow. As sticking with you through this quarantine all the way through till we have baseball back, I promise you I'll be right here with you, right here on Locked On Braves.